Lost Horizon. The novel by James Hilton. Dramatized for radio in three parts by Barry Campbell. Starring Derek Jacobi as Hugh Conway and Alan Wheatley as the High Lama. Episode 3, The Inheritance.
I doubt if I have ever come across a more remarkable story than my friend Rutherford's account of Hugh Conway's adventures in Tibet. That four people should be kidnapped in India and flown over 1,000 miles to Tibet in a stolen aeroplane was incredible enough in itself. But that Conway should discover during a private audience with the High Lama that he was conversing with a man some 250 years old. Well, the whole thing was just too improbable and fantastic to believe. And yet there it was, all set down by Rutherford. Conway had sat dizzied in brain as he listened to the High Lama, until the gathering certainty of his mind sprang to words with an emotion which he did not seek to conceal.
It seems impossible. And yet I can't help thinking of it. It's astonishing. It's extraordinary. And yet not absolutely beyond my powers of belief.
What is it, my son?
That you are still alive, Father Perrault.
And what of the other matter?
The proviso. That you intend to keep us here. I take it that that is the important and invariable proviso.
You have guessed correctly, my son.
And we are really to stay here forever?
I should prefer to employ your excellent English idiom and say that we are all of us here for good.
But what puzzles me is why we four?
We have always aimed, as far as possible, to keep our numbers in fairly constant recruitment. Unfortunately, since the recent European war and the Russian Revolution, travel and exploration in Tibet have been almost completely held up.
I see.
In fact, our last visitor, a Japanese, arrived in 1912 and was not, to be candid, a very valuable acquisition. The position was then that for nearly 2 decades we had welcomed no newcomers. A problem was beginning to arise. And then one of our number came to the rescue with a novel idea. It was to make his way to some surrounding country and bring us additional colleagues by a method which would have been impossible in an earlier age.
I see. You mean he was deliberately sent out to bring someone back by air?
Well, you see, he was an exceedingly gifted and resourceful youth. We had great confidence in him.
But tell me, what's the idea behind it all?
My son, your way of asking that question gives me infinite pleasure. My revelation has been greeted in almost every conceivable manner, but never until this night with more interest. Today you are interested. Tomorrow you will feel concern. Eventually, it may be, we shall claim your devotion.
That's more than I should care to promise.
Your very doubt pleases me. It is the basis of a profound and significant faith. But let us not argue. You are interested, and that from you is much. You are still, I should say, a youngish man. Your life, as people say, lies ahead of you. By the standards of Shangri-La, your sunlit years have scarcely yet begun. It will happen, perhaps, that decades hence, you will feel no older than you are today. You may preserve, as Henschel did, a long and wondrous youth. But that, believe me, is only an early and superficial phase. There will come a time when you will age like others, though far more slowly, and into a condition infinitely nobler. But we are not workers of miracles. We have made no conquest of death, nor even of decay. All we have done is to slacken the tempo of the brief interval called life. Make no mistake, the end awaits us all. Yet nevertheless, it is a prospect of much charm that I unfold for you. The years will come and go, and you will pass from fleshly enjoyments into austerer, but no less satisfying realms. And most precious of all, you will have time. Time. That rare and lovely gift that your Western countries have lost the more they have pursued it. But you make no comment, my dear Conway. Perhaps you are thinking of someone left behind in the outside world.
I am unmarried. I have few close friends and no ambitions.
And your work?
I was in the consular service, quite a subordinate post, but it suited me well enough.
But your soul was not in it.
Neither my soul, nor my heart, nor more than half my energies. I'm naturally rather lazy.
Laziness in doing certain things can be a great virtue. In any case, you will not find us exacting in such a matter. Chang has no doubt explained to you our principle of moderation.
Yes.
Well, one of the things in which we are always moderate is activity. All things considered, I feel sure you will get used to our ways without too much effort. There is, I admit, an odd quality in you that I have never met in any of our visitors hitherto. It is, if I had to put a single word to it, passionlessness.
As good a word as most, no doubt. I don't know whether you classify the people who come here, but if so, you can label me 1914, 1918. I used up most of my passion and energies during those years. And though I don't talk much about it, the chief thing I've asked from the world since is to leave me alone. I find in this place a certain charm and quietness that appeals to me. And no doubt, as you remarked, I shall get used to things.
Is that all, my son? Is there nothing in the prospect I have briefly outlined that tempts you to any stronger feeling?
I was deeply impressed by your story of the past, but your sketch of the future interests me only in the abstract sense. I can't look so far ahead. I should certainly be sorry if I had to leave Shangri-La tomorrow, or perhaps even next year. But How I shall feel about it if I live to be 100. It isn't a matter to prophesy. I can face it like any other future. But in order to make me keen, it must have a reason.
There is a reason, and a definite one. Indeed, it is the vision of Father Perrault when he lay dying in this very room in 1789. As he looked back on his long life, it seemed to him that all the loveliest things were transient and perishable, and that war, lust, and brutality might someday crush them until there were no more left in the world. He saw the nations strengthening not in wisdom, but in vulgar passions and the will to destroy. He foresaw a time when men, exultant in the technique of homicide, would rage so hotly over the world that every precious thing would be in danger. Every book and picture, every treasure garnered through the millennia, the small, the delicate, the defenseless, all would be lost. Believe me, that vision will come true. And that is why I am here, and why you are here, and why we may pray to outlive the doom that gathers on every side.
To outlive it?
There is a chance.
And you think that Shangri-La will escape?
Perhaps we may expect no mercy, but we may faintly hope for neglect. Here we shall stay, conserving the frail elegances of a dying age, and seeking such wisdom as men will need when their passions are all spent. We have a heritage to cherish and bequeath. But let us take what pleasure we may until that time comes.
And then?
Then, when the strong have destroyed each other, the Christian ethic may at last be fulfilled, and the meek shall inherit the earth.
I understand you, Father.
Well, you certainly had a long talk with the boss last night. What sort of a guy is he?
Did he say anything about the porters?
Or the mission station?
I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint you all. I didn't discuss the question of the mission with him, Miss Springfield, and he didn't mention porters at all, Malleson. As for his appearance, I can only say he's a very old man who speaks excellent English.
The main thing to us is whether he's to be trusted or not.
He didn't strike me as a dishonorable person.
Why on earth didn't you worry him about the porters?
It didn't occur to me.
I can't understand you, Conway. You seem to have gone all to pieces.
I'm sorry.
No good being sorry. You ought to buck up.
Now, you misunderstand me, Marinson. I meant that I was sorry to have disappointed you. Look here, it's no use continually harping on bat school. Of course I was different then. It was a completely different situation.
Well, it's something I'd rather face than all this mystery business. That Chinese girl, for instance, how did she get here? Did the fellow tell you?
No, why should he?
Well, why shouldn't he? And why shouldn't you ask? Is it usual to find a young girl living with a lot of monks?
This isn't an ordinary monastery.
My God, it isn't.
Of course, the morals of this place are quite hideous.
I don't reckon you folks that value my opinion on a matter of morals, but I should say myself that quarrels are just as bad. Yes. Well, let's keep our tempers and make ourselves comfortable.
I can quite believe you find it more comfortable than Dartmoor, Barnard.
Dartmoor? Oh, that's your big penitentiary. I get you. Well, yes, I certainly never did envy the folks in those places.
Ah, Mr. Conway.
Hmm?
Deep in thought, I see.
What?
Sorry, I startled you.
No, not at all, Chang. But as you know, I now have much to think about.
Indeed. It is strange at first, is it not, to comprehend such a concept. Henceforth, with your fellow exiles, you will live in a world conditioned by the arrival of the porters and the return to India, while at all other times, the horizon will lift like a curtain. Time will expand and space contract. But come, let us walk by the lotus pool, where we may discuss such matters without the fear of being overheard.
Chang, tell me about the life I may expect to lead, should I stay here.
Ah, for the first 5 years, you will lead a perfectly normal life without any special regimen. This is to enable the body to accustom itself to the altitude and also to give time for the dispersal of mental and emotional regrets. Then, after the probationary 5 years, the process of retarding age begins.
What about yourself? How did it work out in your case?
Ah, my dear sir, I was lucky enough to arrive here in 1855 when I was quite young. Only 22.
22?
I lost my way in the mountains. When I was at last rescued and brought to Shangri-La, I was so ill that only extreme youth and virility saved me.
So you're now 97.
Yes. Very soon, if the lamas give their consent, I shall receive full initiation.
I see. You have to wait for the round figure.
Oh, no, no. We are not restricted to any definite age limit. But a century is generally considered to be an age beyond which the passions and moods of ordinary life are likely to have disappeared.
Yes, I should certainly think so. And what happens afterwards? How long do you expect to carry on?
In years, perhaps another century or more.
Suppose you were to leave the valley now. What would happen?
Death, if I remained away for more than a few days.
The atmosphere, then, is essential.
There is only one valley of blue moon. And those who expect to find another are asking too much of nature.
Well, then, what would have happened if you'd left the valley, say, 30 years ago, during your prolonged youth?
I should probably have died even then. In any case, I should have acquired very quickly the full appearance of my actual age.
It gives one a feeling, somehow, that time is like a balked monster waiting outside the valley to pounce on the slackers who've managed to evade him longer than they should.
Slackers?
Slacker? It's a slang word meaning a lazy fellow, good for nothing.
It is significant that the English regard slackness as a vice. We, on the other hand, should vastly prefer it to tension. Is there not too much tension in the world at present? And might it not be better if more people were slackers?
You know, Chang, I'm inclined to agree with you. Lotsen works very hard at her music. Tell me about her.
Lotsen? Ah, yes. Lotsen is of royal Manchu blood. She was betrothed to a prince of Turkestan and was traveling to Kashgar to meet him when the party lost its way in the mountains.
When did this happen?
In 1884. She was 18.
18? Then...
Yes. We are succeeding very well with her, as you may judge for yourself. But come, let us go into the pavilion. There are others there today besides Lotsen, and I would wish you to meet them. Monsieur Briac, I had no wish to interrupt.
Ah, Chang. You just seen the lanket like Tian Jude Briac since. Jin Hola, eating a parking.
Lotsen is most impressed with your playing today, Monsieur Briac.
I am honored. That is high praise indeed. Oh, but let me introduce myself to our guest. My name is Briac. I was once a pupil of Chopin.
How do you do? My name is Conway. I find your playing most impressive.
Merci. You are perhaps a musician yourself?
I do play, in a sort of amateur way.
Oh, then I am doubly glad to make your acquaintance. Should you be interested, I should be happy to pass on to you much of what my famous master taught me. I should also be glad to play for you some of his hitherto unpublished works.
Indeed, then it is I who am honored.
Ah, my humble apologies. My dear sir, I have yet to introduce Herr Meister, Mr. Conway.
Herr Meister.
How do you do?
Have you been at Shangri-La long?
I entered the lamasery in the late 1880s. I was the only survivor of a small expedition.
And are you happy here?
Most happy. I'm writing a book about my pre-Tibetan life.
You see, my dear Conway, one of the first steps towards clarifying the mind is to obtain a panorama of one's own past.
Ah, then I suppose I shall have to set to work to remember my own big moments.
It will not be an effort. They will come to you.
I don't know that I should give them much of a welcome.
Chang, walang aitia ko chile shopana.
Monsieur Briac, Lord Sen requests that you honor us with some more of your exquisite piano playing.
Mon plaisir. I will play again the first unpublished Polonais by my master Chopin.
You know, Conway, I'm not sure that this wouldn't be a nice little place to settle down in.
Yeah?
Just shows. I guess one can get used to anything.
I guess one can.
I hear you had another night out in the valley last night, Bernard.
This establishment caters for all tastes. Some people like little Chinese gals who play the piano, isn't that so? You can't blame anybody for what they fancy.
You can send them to jail, though, when they fancy other people's property.
Sure, if you can catch them. And that leads me to something I may as well tell you folks right away. I've decided to give those porters a miss.
You mean you're not coming with us?
That's it. I've decided to stop over for a while. It's all very fine for you. You'll have the band playing when you get home, but all the welcome I'll get is from a bunch of cops.
In other words, you're just afraid to face the music.
Well, I never did like music.
Oh, I suppose it's your own affair.
As a matter of fact, I think I shall stay too.
Good God.
You see, I've been thinking over the way things happened to bring us all here, and there's only one conclusion I can come to. I was sent here for a purpose, and I shall stay.
Do you mean to say you're hoping to start a mission here?
Not only hoping, but fully intending. I know just how to deal with these people. I shall get my own way, never fear. There's no real grit in any of them. The whole trouble with them is their so-called broad-mindedness, and I intend to fight it with all my power.
And they're so broad-minded that they're going to let you.
Or else she's so strong-minded they can't stop her. It's just what I said. This establishment caters for all tastes. Well, if you'll excuse me, too, I have to find Chang. I've got to discuss this thing.
And so, Chang, two of your four visitors have decided to stay on here. And what's more, without being made privy to any of Shangri-La's secrets.
It is very gratifying. Poor Talu, your pilot, would have been very proud.
But, you know, I'm bothered about young Mallinson.
Oh?
I'm wondering just how he's to be told. He's counting the days to the arrival of those porters. And if they don't come...
But they will come. We are expecting them at or about the time I said.
Then you'll find it very hard to stop Mallinson from joining them.
He will merely discover that the porters are reluctantly unable to take anyone back with them.
I see. So that's the method. What a pity, though, Chang, that he can't just be allowed to go back without any fuss. After all, you let Talu go outside the valley.
Indeed, we did. For the authorities at Shangri-La are fully empowered to do anything that they consider wise. But, my dear Conway, should we be wise in trusting ourselves and our future entirely to your friend's feelings of gratitude?
I do see what you mean.
But come. I am quite sure that the problem will be resolved without too much difficulty. Let us stroll by the pool for a little and listen to the beautiful music of Lord.
By the way, Chang, I've been meaning to ask, how do you people here fit love into your scheme of things?
Love?
Yes, I suppose it does sometimes happen that those who come here develop attachments.
Oh, quite often. The lamas, of course, are immune. And so are most of us when we reach the riper years. But until then, we are as other men. Tell me, is it possible that you are falling in love with Lord Sen?
What makes you ask that?
Because, my dear sir, It would be quite suitable if you were to do so. Always, of course, in moderation. Lotzen would not respond with any degree of passion. That is more than you could expect. But the experience would be delightful, I assure you. And I speak with some authority. For I was in love with her myself when I was much younger.
Were you indeed? And did she respond then?
Only by the most charming appreciation of the compliment I paid her. And by a friendship which has grown more precious with the years.
In other words, she didn't respond.
If you prefer it so.
Well, that's all very well in your case. And perhaps in mine too. But what about the attitude of a hot-blooded young fellow like Mallinson?
My dear sir, it would be the best possible thing that could happen. Not for the first time, I assure you, would Lo Tsen comfort the sorrowful exile when he learns that there is to be no return.
In that sense, then, you could regard her as part of the training equipment of the establishment.
You could regard her as that if you wished. But it would be more graceful and just as true to liken her to the rainbow reflected in a glass bowl or to the dewdrops on the blossom of the fruit tree.
I entirely agree with you, Chang. That would be much more graceful.
And now, at this time, I am to take you to the High Lama again.
Tell me, my son, have you kept all our secrets from your three companions?
Yes, up to now. It has proved awkward for me at times, but probably less so than if I had told them.
Just as I surmised. You have acted as you thought best, and the awkwardness, after all, is only temporary. Chang tells me that he thinks that two of them will give little trouble.
I dare say that is so.
And the third?
Mallinson is an excitable youth, and he's pretty keen to get back to India. He's energetic, and he has ambitions. As for the others, as a matter of fact, it happens to suit them both to stay here.
Yes. We have done our best to make both of them feel at home. Miss Brinklow wishes to convert us. And Mr. Barnard also would like to convert us into a limited liability company. But your young friend, to whom neither gold nor religion can offer solace, how about him?
Yes, he's going to be a problem.
I'm afraid he's going to be your problem.
Why mine?
Because, my son, I am going to die.
But
you are surprised? All I announce is the simple truth that already I see the end. I realize that I have time for only one more thing. Can you imagine what that is? It concerns you, my son.
You do me a great honor.
My son, I place in your hands the heritage and the destiny of Shangri-La. I have waited for you, my son. For a long time, I have sat in this room and seen the faces of newcomers. I have looked into their eyes and heard their voices, and always in hope that someday I might find you. My friend, it is not an arduous task that I bequeath. To be gentle and patient, to care for the riches of the mind, to preside in wisdom and secrecy while the storm rages without.
this storm you talk of?
It will be such a one, my son, as the world has not seen before. There will be no safety by arms, no help from authority, no answer in science. It will rage till every flower of culture is trampled, and all human things are leveled in a vast chaos.
And you think all this will come in my time?
I believe that you will live through the storm. And after, through the long age of desolation, you may still live, grow older and wiser and more patient. You will conserve the fragrance of our history and add to it the touch of your own mind. Beyond that, my vision weakens. But I see at a great distance a new world stirring in the ruins. Stirring clumsily, but in hopefulness, seeking its lost and legendary treasures. And they will all be here, my son. Hidden behind the mountains, in the valley of the blue moon.
Father Perro. Father Perro.
Great news. Come on, Conway. We've got till dawn to pack and we can get away.
Away?
The porters are about 5 miles beyond the pass. They came yesterday with loads of books and things. Tomorrow they begin the journey back. It just shows how these fellows here intended to let us down. They never told us. I say, what's the matter? Are you ill?
Ill? No. I don't think so. I'm just rather tired.
Probably the storm. Where were you all the while? I've been waiting for you for hours.
I was visiting the High Lama.
Oh, him. Well, that's for the last time, anyhow, thank God.
Yes. For the last time.
Well, I wish you wouldn't sound so deuced leisurely about it.
Look, I'm afraid I don't quite follow. You say the porters?
Yes, porters, man. Do pull yourself together.
You're thinking of going out to them?
Thinking of it? I'm damn well certain. They're only just over the ridge, and we've got to start immediately.
But you can't just present yourself and demand to be escorted. It all needs arrangement beforehand.
Or anything else to cause a delay. God, what a fellow you are! Everything's arranged. The porters have been paid in advance, and they've agreed to take us.
But I don't understand.
I don't suppose you do, but it doesn't matter.
Well, who's been making all these plans?
Lotsen, if you must know. She's with the porters now. She's waiting.
Lotsen?
Yes. She's coming with us.
That's nonsense. It's impossible.
Why is it impossible?
Because, well, it is. It's incredible enough that she should be out there now. But the idea of her going any farther is just preposterous.
I don't see that it's preposterous at all. It's as natural for her to want to leave here as for me. A kid of her age shut up here with a lot of old men. Naturally she'll get away if she's given a chance.
Now, don't you think you may be imagining her position in the light of your own? As I've always told you, she's perfectly happy here.
Then why did she say she'd come?
She said that? How could she? She doesn't speak English.
I asked her. Miss Brinklow worked out the words. It wasn't very fluent conversation, but it was quite enough to lead to an understanding.
But there's such a thing as being too impetuous. Where do you think she'll go if she does leave?
I'll see that she's looked after myself. After all, if you are rescuing people from something quite hellish, you don't stop to inquire if they've anywhere else to go.
And you think Shangri-La is hellish?
Definitely I do. The most frightful thing of all, to me, is the effect it's had on you. Conway, what has happened to you? I don't suppose you realize it, but I've been terribly alone these last few weeks. Nobody seemed to be caring a damn about the only thing that was really important. Barnard and Miss Brinklow had reasons of a kind, but it was pretty awful when I found you against me.
Then let me help you, if I can, by telling you something. When you've heard it, you'll understand, I hope, a great deal of what now seems very curious and difficult. At any rate, you'll realize why Lotsen can't possibly go back with you.
I don't think anything would make me see that. But go on.
Very well. You remember how preoccupied I was after my first visit to the High Lama? And there it is. And so you too now know the history of Father Perrault and the Lamasery of Shangri-La. And also why Lotsen can never go with you.
I really don't know what to say, Conway. Except that you must be completely mad.
So you think I'm mad?
Well, I should damn well say so. After a tale like that, it's utter nonsense.
You think it's nonsense?
Well, how else can I look at it? I'm sorry, Conway, it's a pretty strong statement, but I don't see how any sane person could be in any doubt about it. All this about llamas being hundreds of years old and having discovered a sort of elixir of youth, well, I mean to say.
Yes, I dare say you do find it hard to believe. Perhaps I did myself at first. I scarcely remember.
Look here, Conway. This place has got on your nerves, and I don't wonder at it. Pack up your things and let's quit. We'll finish this argument a month or two hence after a jolly little dinner at the club.
I have no desire at all to go back to that sort of life.
Do you mean you're not coming with me? You're going to stay here like the other two? Then at least you shan't stop me from clearing out. I must go. I gave my word.
To Lutzen?
Yes, if you want to know.
Well, goodbye, Berenson. And good luck.
For the last time. You're not coming.
I can't.
Goodbye, then.
Goodbye. What's happened? Why are you back?
I hadn't the nerve. You remember that steep climb where we were all roped together?
Yes.
In the moonlight, it looked frightful. Silly, isn't it? I hadn't the nerve. Oh, why won't you come, Conway? I hate imploring you for my own sake, but damn it all, I'm young, and we've been pretty good friends together. And Lotsen, too, she's young. Doesn't she count at all?
Lotsen is not young.
Oh, no, not young, not young at all, of course.
Mallinson, Lotsen came here in 1884.
You're raving, man.
There's just one question I'd like to ask you.
Yes.
Are you in love with Lotsen?
I dare say I am. I know you'll say it's absurd, but I can't help my feelings.
No, I don't think it's absurd at all. I can't help my feelings either. You and Lotsen happen to be the two people in the world I care most about, though you may think it odd of me. Well, old man, we've said all we can say, haven't we?
Yes, I suppose we have. Oh, what stupid nonsense it all is about her not being young. She's just a girl. I was terribly sorry for her, and we were both attracted. I don't see that it's anything to be ashamed of. In fact, in a place like this, I should think it's about the decentest thing that's ever happened. Conway? I say, Conway.
Well, now, Mallinson, do you think you could manage that tricky bit with a rope if I were with you?
Conway, you mean you'll come? You've made up your mind at last. Wonderful to see you, your real self again.
Not at all. Now we must make for the plateau. What was that?
Look at the law!
It's Lo Chen! Over here! We're over here! Then. Yes. Huh? Conway's coming with us. Tell her, Conway, tell her.
What? Be Bing Bing?
Tell her, Conway. Everything's going to be all right.
Hilton! How nice to see you.
What the devil are you doing in Delhi? I heard you were in Kashgar. There was no end of bosh about it in the papers.
Yes, the truth would have made a better story. But we can't talk here. Let's smoke a cigar out in the garden.
Righto.
That's better. These legation affairs are all very well for the first 10 minutes.
If you weren't in Kashgar then, Rutherford, where were you? Searching for Conway?
Searching is too strong a word. You can't search a country half as big as Europe for one man.
So you thought it might be easier to look for the Valley of the Blue Moon?
Well, it did seem as though it might be a more fixed proposition. I suppose you glanced at that manuscript of mine.
Much more than glanced at it. I should have returned it, by the way, but you left no address.
I wonder what you made of it.
I thought it very remarkable. Assuming, of course, that it's all quite genuinely based on what Conway told you.
I give you my solemn word that it is. I have a good memory, and Conway always had a way of describing things.
Well, as I said, it's all very remarkable.
Well, if that's all you're going to say, I can see I shall have to speak for myself. I was certainly taken with Conway's story, in more ways than one. And that was why I felt interested enough to put as many tabs on it as I could. I must have done thousands of miles. The facts are as follows, so far as I've been able to verify them. Conway left Baskul on the 20th of May and arrived in Chungkyang on the 5th of October. The last we know of him is that he left Bangkok on the 3rd of February. All the rest is guesswork, myth or legend, whatever you like to call it.
So you didn't find anything in Tibet?
Oh, my dear fellow, I never got to Tibet at all. Huh? People up at Government House wouldn't hear of it.
But...
Well, they looked at me as if I'd suggested writing a life of Gandhi. As a matter of fact, they knew more than I did. Strolling about in Tibet isn't a one-man job. It needs an expedition. I remember when Conway was telling me his story, I kept wondering, why all the fuss about waiting for the porters? Why didn't they simply walk off? I wasn't very long finding out. Not all the passports in the world could have got me over the Kunluns. Although I did see them from a distance.
Were they very forbidding?
It looked like a white frieze on the horizon. That was all. Then at Yarkand in Turkestan, I had the luck to fall in with an American traveller who'd once tried to cross them.
I'm sure there are passes, but they're very high and, what's more, unmapped.
But what about the valley that Conway described to me? Is it possible that there is such a place?
Well, possible, but not very likely, on geographical grounds at any rate.
Well, then, have you ever heard of a cone-shaped mountain, almost as high as the highest of the Himalaya?
It's a funny thing. There was a legend about such a mountain. There are even rumors of mountains higher than Everest. But I doubt if any peak in the Kunluns is more than 25,000, if that. Sorry not to be more help.
No, not at all. But tell me, you've been in the country several times. What about these Tibetan lamaseries? What are they like?
Well, they aren't usually beautiful places, and the monks in them are generally corrupt and dirty.
Do they live long?
Yes, very often, if they don't die some filthy disease.
But what about drugs and medicines for prolonging life?
Well, there are all sorts of legends about the lamas. I suspect that they're rather like the Indian rope trick. Always something that somebody else has seen.
Yeah.
Although I can say that some of the lamas do have odd powers of bodily control.
So there we are. And probably you'll agree that all the evidence so far is less than you'd hang a dog on.
It's certainly inconclusive. Had the American ever heard of Caracal or of Shangri-La?
No, I tried him with them. The only thing he did say of interest was that he once met a fellow who'd been on an expedition to Tibet in 1911, I think he said. Well, somewhere near the Kunluns, they'd come across a Chinese who was being carried in a chair by native bearers. The fellow spoke English quite well and invited the expedition to visit a nearby lamasery. But the members of the expedition weren't interested. I don't suggest it means a great deal. When a man tries to remember a casual incident that happened 20 years ago, you can't build too much on it. But it offers attractive speculation.
What about Baskul?
Baskul was hopeless, and Peshawar was worse. Nobody could tell me anything except that the kidnapping of the aeroplane did take place. Then I tried to trace the fellow Barnard, but found his past history so mysterious that I shouldn't be surprised if he was Chalmers Bryant, as Conway said.
Did you try to find out anything about the pilot, Talu?
I tried, but it was hopeless. But I did make one rather quaint discovery, and one which I could have made just as easily without leaving London. There was a German professor at Jena who took to globetrotting and who visited Tibet in 1887. He never came back. His name was Friedrich Meister.
Good heavens. That was one of the names Conway mentioned.
Yes, though it may only be a coincidence. It doesn't prove the whole story by any means.
But it's odd.
Yes, it's odd enough.
Did you succeed in tracing any of the others?
No. It's a pity I hadn't a longer list to work on. I couldn't find any record of a pupil of Chopin's called Briac. Though, of course, that doesn't prove there wasn't one. Mm-hmm. Perrault and Henshaw proved equally impossible to trace.
How about Mallinson? Did you try and find out what happened to him and the Chinese girl?
My dear fellow, of course I did. The awkward part was, as you perhaps gathered from the manuscript, that Conway's story ended at the moment they were about to leave the valleys with the porters.
Yes.
After that, he either couldn't or wouldn't tell me what happened. I feel we can guess at some sort of tragedy. The hardships of such a journey would be perfectly appalling. We shall never know exactly what did occur, but it seems tolerably certain that Mallinson never reached China.
Poor chap.
I made all sorts of inquiries concerning the shipment of goods across the Tibetan frontier, but at all the likely places I drew complete blanks. Then I tried at Tatsian Fu, where the Chinese coolies from Yunnan transferred their loads to the Tibetans. There was absolutely no record of Conway's party arriving at all.
So, how Conway reached the mission hospital at Chungkiang is still unexplained.
The only conclusion is that he wandered there, just as he might have wandered anywhere else. It's all really an exercise in the balancing of probabilities. And I must say the scales don't bump very emphatically either way. Of course, if you don't accept Conway's story, it means you either doubt his veracity or his sanity. Well, may as well be frank.
I believe his experiences during the war had a marked effect on him.
Yes, he was a good deal changed by it. You can't subject a boy to 3 years of intense physical and emotional stress without tearing something to tatters. Hmm. Well, there it is. Oh, but there is one last point that I must mention. And perhaps in some ways it's the oddest thing of all.
Oh?
It came out during my inquiries at the mission, when I asked about the manner in which Conway had reached the hospital first of all, whether he'd been alone and so forth. Well, I was on the point of giving up when one of the nuns remarked, "I think the doctor said he was brought here by a woman."
But
that was all she could tell me. The doctor had by now left the mission to work in a big hospital in Shanghai, so I went there. It was just after a Jap air raid, and things were pretty grim.
I am sorry to have kept you waiting, Mr. Lutherford, but as you see, there is much to be done.
Indeed, and I'm sorry to disturb you.
Oh, no.
But I promise not to take too much of your time. I'm seeking information about my friend Conway.
Ah, yes. I remember very well. The Englishman who lost his memory.
Yes.
But how can I help you?
Was it true that he was brought to the mission hospital by a woman?
Oh, yes. Most certainly by a woman. A Chinese woman, a Manchu.
Ah. Can you tell me what you remember about her? Anything. Anything at all?
Oh, I remember that she had the fever and died almost immediately. I am sorry that that is all.
I see. Well, thank you for your help. Just one thing about the Manchu woman.
Yes.
Was she a young woman?
Young? Oh, no. She was most old. Most old of anyone I have ever seen.
A Manchu woman? But surely
a woman most old of anyone I have ever seen. Poor old Conway. Still searching for his ultimate dream of Blue Moon.
Do you think he'll ever find it?
Who can tell?
And so ends Lost Horizon by James Hilton. Dramatized for radio by Barry Campbell. Derek Jacobi was Hugh Conway, and Alan Wheatley was the High Lama. Mallinson, Andrew Branch. Barnard, Alan Tilvern. Miss Brinklow, Carol Marsh. Rutherford, John Livesey. James Hilton, Alaric Cotter. Chang, Gannard Green. Lo Tsen, Hick Sen Lim. The Chinese Doctor, John Bull. And the American Traveller, Crawford Logan. The piano and the harpsichord were played by Anthony Mile. Lost Horizon was directed by Graham Gould.